Shalom Aleichem. My name is David Cohn. My pleasure to be here. Here in the Kerel. To me, it's a special pleasure that we're here in the Kerel together, sharing the same podium with the COR, a well-known Hashkacha. And I'm here. I'm happy to be able to share a little bit about Bishul and Pas Yisrael. My goal here is to, I understand that many of the people have been learning through Yachid Kala, the halachas of Bishul and Pas Yisrael. I'm going to try to give some practical application to some of those halachas that you've been learning, and to sensitize you to some of the shilas that go on for hashkachas that produce foods that you eat and you'll go back home and see in your pantry to understand some of the shilas that there are. We'll talk a little bit about food service. As we move along, we'll talk about that. But I'm gonna shy away from the direct halacha shilas, and I mean we'll talk about them. We can't talk about Bishul Yisrael without mentioning certain halachas and going through shilas. But my focus is not meant to be as in a shir or discuss a shilas. But we're gonna go through many different questions that there are, and I want to just open with a caution, which is some of the examples I'm going to give. I'm going to give go through the erech 15 to 20 different foods, and some people's reaction to hearing that will be is, "Oh my gosh, I'm not going to eat this, and I'm not going to eat this, and I'm not going to eat this." And just to put it in perspective, the din is one of the din of Bishul Akim is that a suffolk of Bishul Akim is mutter. Bishul Akim is a din derabbanan. So I'm not here to frighten you and tell you to go home and stop eating. My goal is to educate you, and you should then, having learned through the halachas, or be inspired to then learn through the halachas and go to a rav and ask your shayla what is or what is not appropriate. And overall, to give you a better appreciation for what goes into giving a proper hashkacha, and why hashkacha is not just administering ingredients, but that has to be tied together with a good understanding of the dinim, and as Rabbi Levin mentioned, the year of Shemayim to do the right thing and to know what's right and wrong. I'm going to break my talk up into five parts. The first is about foods that are not cooked. Now, you say to me, if a food is not cooked, then obviously you can't eat Bishul Yisrael. If I bought the food and it was raw, then of course it can't be Bishul Akim if the food is raw. So I'll mention a few halachas and then we'll get to some examples of what would appear to be a raw food, which is not necessarily so. The thing is like this. If a goy cooks a food until it's kamaichu ben drusoy, until it's passably edible, you could get it down, that food becomes Bishul Akim. However, the Rama says that if a yid finishes off the cooking of that food, if a yid contributes to the cooking of that food after it was already usher as Bishul Akim, the yid could save it. He could take it back from being Bishul Akim and turn it back into being Bishul Yisrael. There are cases where even the Mechaber agrees to that, but for sure for Ashkenazim, the Ramah says that after a goy made a Bishul Akim, if I could come over later and make the food back to being Bishul Yisrael. Also, Bishul Akim only applies if the goy cooked the food through a traditional heating process. If the goy made the food edible not through cooking, he did it through brining, through what we call kolosh, he did it through smoking. Those things are hagam, that those things make the food edible. The guy is the one who made, I used to not be able to eat it, and now I can. That's not in the dinim of Bishul Akim, and that food is mutter. And I'm going to, one of the things that I will mention in passing a number of times is that there's a shaila in the Achronim, whether foods that are, what, when we say that food cooked by ishun, by smoking, is mutter, the traditional way to do that is with a smoke that's cold. It's at a room temperature, but the exposure to the smoke makes the food edible. What happens if the smoke is not cold, but the smoke is hot, which is a more modern way of smoking foods? And the really modern way of doing it is that it's cooked with steam. Instead of cooking the food with a smoke or with an electric heat in the room, they put, as Rabbi Levin mentioned sort of in passing, they'll hang in a room like this, they'll hang hundreds of tuna will be hanging here in the room, and they'll just pump steam into the room. So the fish are being cooked, not by like a fire in your house, they're being cooked by steam just pumping into the room. So is that included in the heter of Ishu, or is it not included in the heter? Okay, and we will see that question is going to come up a number of times. That's quite a machlokes in the Achronim. Many Achronim have spoken about it, and we're going to see that come up a number of times. So I'm talking about now foods that give the appearance of being not cooked. And the first one I want to mention is rice. You go home, you open up a bag or a box of rice, and you got to cook it on the fire. So to all appearances, that food is not cooked. And of course, you say, what is it? How could it need this in the salt? Okay. In fact, there are three types of rice, and I'm going to use terms that are not so perfectly correct, but they're reasonably correct, which is, there is rice that's completely raw. There's rice that's called parboiled, which, as its name implies, that it's partially cooked. And then there's rice that's typically labeled as instant rice. And the difference is that the parboiled rice is partially cooked, and you finish off the cooking at home. So even though the guy cooked it in the factory, as we said, the Ramah says, if the guy cooked it, he made it bishalakim, it's coming into your house bishalakim, when you take it in your house and you cook it, you make it into bishul yisrael. But the Ramah says, after it was made bishalakim, you can make it into bishul yisrael. It's used often. I can't say it is, but it's often kamachu ben jesoy. I'm saying even, were it to be kamachu ben jesoy, that's for when you bring it into your house, if you're an Ashkenazi, you can make it edible when you finish the cooking in your house. However, the rice that's typically called instant rice, that rice is 100% cooked in the factory. When you bring it to your house, if you look at the package, it says, you put it, cook it for 5 minutes. Okay, that 5 minutes of cooking is not to cook the food. That 5 minutes is to make it a little moist and to make it warm, because people don't like eating cold rice. But the etzem, it's fully cooked. How do I know? Because not only have people tested it in the factory, but I have myself taken it, take the rice, and dunk it into warm water, and let it sit there for 15 minutes. Put it into water that's in a cliché that you can't cook in it, and it sits there for 15 minutes, and it's perfect. Okay? And we'll see in other examples like that. The food is fully edible. So what you're doing is just warming it up. What you're doing is just adding moisture to it, but it's fully edible. It was in the factory, and it is as you have it today. It just needs some warmth, just add some moisture to make it edible. So that food was made by the guy in the factory. It potentially was made by a guy in the factory, and it's fully cooked, and it's too late for you to help it. It's not, you're not able anymore to add to the cooking to make it bishul yisrael. It's not like the parboiled rice. That's one example. We'll come back to this in a second. Another example. Excuse me? Okay, we'll think about that question. It's not far-fetched as you can. We'll think about that separately. Baruch Hashem, the first person spoke about Shabbos and Bishlachim, and I'm just Bishlachim. So another food that's like this is a food you may be familiar with. It's called couscous. Okay, it's a Sephardi Israeli type food, but plenty of people eat it also. And there's two ways to make couscous. There's, so to speak, the real way, and then there's the imitation way. Okay, the real way to make couscous is you take a grain of semolina wheat. It's the kind of wheat that you use for making pasta. You take a whole grain and you file it down until it gets the nice little round shape or the little piece, whatever shape you like, but you file down a whole grain of wheat, a whole wheat kernel, and after you've created the shape that you like, then the factory cooks it. And it leaves the factory 100% cooked and 100% edible. And not only have I tested it, like I mentioned before, that you could put it into warm water, but I do this when we have leftover. I'll take this to work, put it into warm water, and 15 minutes later, I have a hot lunch. Because it's 100% edible. It doesn't need to be cooked on a fire. It says there are directions for how to cook it. But the food is coming to your house 100% edible. And although you might make it better, although the Ramah says that if a yid finishes the cooking, it's good. Once the cooking is completely finished, cooking later is not going to help you. So these foods are fully cooked. Now, that I mentioned, that's the real way. The traditional way to make couscous. There are things that are called couscous which are not that at all, and they're really pasta, they're just pasta in the shape of these tiny little balls or something like that. They're made a different way, and those are raw. Okay, but the couscous that's made the traditional way is in fact a fully cooked item. And a third example, which is similar, is something called... If you buy couscous and I don't like it, you're talking about raw, you're talking about a big, not ready to eat or ready to eat, I should say. Not ready to eat, right? So that stuff is fully edible. If it's the real stuff, as opposed to the fast, what? Yeah. stuff that we use in my house, it's fully plant, it's fully cooked. And another food like that is made from cracked wheat. It's called tabbouleh. That's really a Sephardi food. And that's made from cracked wheat. And there, the way you prepare it, you don't even use heat when you prepare it. The real way to prepare it, meaning when you bring the cracked wheat into your house and you make tabbouleh salad, is you soak the cracked wheat in water, add some spices and herbs and things like that, and it turns out you don't even use heat at all. In the couscous, you might think you're cooking it because you actually cook it on a fire, but it's already cooked. But the tabbouleh, you don't even make it like that. So the tabbouleh, just for curiosity, we were talking to a chef to find out if it's oil or shulchan wachim. Okay, we'll get to that. To oil or shulchan wachim in a minute. We spoke to a person who's a very prominent chef. He's a frum person who prepares food for very fancy affairs. And we asked him, like, how would you serve it? So he said he just an interesting answer. He said to us, he said, I do a lot of work in these fancy hotels. He said, and I have to tell you, he says, when I do an affair for Sfardim, he says, I would never dream of making such a wedding or something like this if it wasn't without tabbouleh salad. There would be no such thing. It was like as if I left the bread out. I couldn't make such a dish, a food like an affair without that. He said, but if I went, and I'll use his words, he says, if I served it at an Ashkenazi affair, they look at it like it's dog food. He says, they don't even know what to do with this stuff. So it was just interesting. For some people, you know, which is the people who eat tabbouleh salad, it's mamash, it's oil, so welcome. And for other people, in his words, it's dog food. Okay, so we have these foods. I mentioned a few foods. We have rice and couscous and the cracked wheat for the tabbouleh salad. That some of these things are fully cooked. In some of their forms, they're fully cooked by the time you get them.
How about rice and pasta?
Excuse me?
Rice and pasta.
Okay. Rice, pasta? That is to say, he means it's pasta in the shape of a piece of rice.
No.
Oh, pasta made out of rice? Is that from cookers? I have to think about that. That's okay. It's probably not cooked before. I have to think about that. I have to think about how you make that. I would think that it's not.
It's like other pasta. Rice pasta is the same as other
pasta. It's made, I believe, from rice powder, which I think is not cooked. But I have to think that. I'm not going to answer off the cuff. So these foods that we mentioned, on the surface, they should require Bishri Yisrael. That is to say, the factory that's making this food has to realize that food needs Bishri Yisrael. Now, for better or for worse, these foods that I mentioned are usually in the factory are cooked with live steam. That's the most common way to cook these foods. Excuse me. So, those who are makel to say that food cooked with live steam is considered ishun, it's not considered cooking with heat, ishun does not need Bishri Yisrael. So if you hold that cooking with hot steam is not considered, does not consider bishul to make a bishul akum, then these foods don't need Bishri Yisrael. If you hold,
even the instant,
if you hold that usually these foods are cooked with live steam in the factory, not always, but usually, if you hold that hot steam doesn't need Bishri Yisrael, then you're off the hook. Well, then the hashgacha is off the hook. So I'm mentioning this as an example. There's a shaila about whether hot smoking makes you have to have Bishri Yisrael. And the rice that you ate on Shabbos may have been soymuch on that kula. Now, I'm not saying mutter rasher, but that shaila is negated to all these foods that really to the layman have the appearance of being raw food. You pick up a bag of rice, to the appearance is that it's a raw food. And we're going to see as we go on that the kula that I just said to you, that maybe it's cooked by steam, is not even always as true as it seems. Okay. Excuse me?
With instant oatmeal?
Okay, instant oatmeal is usually cooked, actually. But the oatmeal is not oil shulchan wachim. So, whereas rice and the foods that I mentioned are presumably oil shulchan wachim, most people wouldn't consider oatmeal the way we eat it as oil shulchan wachim. Excuse me? But bulgur, I don't know who asked the question, I can't look at him. But bulgur is the wheat that's used to create tabbouleh salad. That's what it is. And it's fully cooked. Typically, it's fully cooked by the time you see it in the store. Okay. Let's move on to the definition of oil shulchan wachim. For most, as was mentioned earlier, it's generally accepted that oil shulchan wachim is defined as something that would be served at a state dinner, at a more sophisticated affair, As opposed to, I'll mention it just it's worth mentioning, that it is said over in the name of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish held that Shulchan Melachim includes anything that the Melech would eat, meaning even what the Melech eats for breakfast. Meaning not when the Melech is in the function and in the role as a Melech, sitting at a state dinner, you know, meeting dignitaries, blah, blah, blah. Even without that, even what he eats privately, which, if you hold like that, means that there's almost nothing that's not Olo Shulchan Melachim. Because the Melachim, they basically, they, whatever you say, they're just like us, you know, they eat the same food that we do. So most people don't accept that. Most people say that we looked at Shulchan Melachim, what they serve when they're in their role as a Melech, they're eating in a more sophisticated, and for our way of judging it, we usually judge it, as has been mentioned, by what a person, what they would serve for us at a chasana, at a dinner, something more sophisticated, as opposed to what you would serve at a bris, or at a shalom zachar, or you serve at a brunch, that's a less sophisticated meal, that's what's not considered oil shulchan aruch.
Should we tell you the minute of bakar?
Very much so, it depends on the place, yes. Okay, also, another shayla that was mentioned in passing by Rabbi Kulik, which we're not going to talk about, we're going to assume a certain way, is if you have a food that could be prepared in more than one way, it could be prepared in a way that's Arla Shulchan Aruchim and a way that's not Arla Shulchan Aruchim, we're going to work with the assumption that if you prepared it in the way that's not Arla Shulchan Aruchim, then the food is mutter. Okay, that's also a shayla in the contemporary question. We're going to assume that food, if you prepared it in the way that's not Arla, then it's mutter. Okay, I said to you, and we've all been assuming that rice is Arla Shulchan Aruchim. What would you say about rice pudding or Rice Krispies? What do you think about those foods in Oil Shulchan Aruch? So, you think, okay, it's better if you told me that I can't eat my rice at home, but Rice Krispies, I mean, obviously Rice Krispies is not Oil Shulchan Aruch. The only problem is that in order to make Rice Krispies, the rice doesn't come out of the ground and then turn into Rice Krispies. Before you make it into Rice Krispies or into rice pudding, really the first thing they do is cook up a huge pot of rice. Okay, and really in the factory, there's this huge pot of rice, which later turns into rice pudding or Rice Krispies. Okay, but I don't think this was really what the health department wanted them to do, but in a factory that I was at, they were making a different kind of food. The employees would scoop stuff out for lunch. Okay, that's what they did when they want, you know, during lunch, they scoop stuff out of a big pot, because that was for them, that was good. Okay, so they're making a big pot, basically, a very big pot of food, which is Oyla Shulchan Aruchim. Okay? And that stuff is not cooked with steam. It's cooked with water. It's a big pot of rice, just like we would eat. So now, there are those who are makel to say the following. When you make, let's do the rice pudding first. That's the easier one to explain. When you make rice pudding, the typical way you make it is like this. You take your big pot of rice, and you cook it up. A regular pot of rice would take, let's say, 15 minutes to cook. Instead of cooking it for 15 minutes, they cook it for 45 minutes, for an hour. And then what do you think is going to happen to rice when you cook it for 45 minutes? The whole thing is, all the pieces of rice are going to fall apart, and it's going to turn into this big mush of mushed up rice, okay? And then you let it cool down, and guess what it looks like? Rice pudding. That's what you want. That's what rice pudding is. Okay, so this food went from being raw, it was put into the pot raw, and the guy cooked it, and if you stood there for 45 minutes, you would have noticed that after 15 minutes, the food was Oyla Shulchan Aruchim, but he didn't stop, he just let it keep on going. And he let it cook for 45 minutes or for an hour. By the time he finished, the stuff was not Oyla Shulchan Aruchim, it was just a big mush of rice pudding. Okay, so now, if you have a food like that, it has been suggested that since the guy's cooking took the food from being raw to being not Oyla Shulchan Aruchim, even though it temporarily passed through being Oyla Shulchan Aruchim in the middle, there was a time in the middle that it was Oyla Shulchan Aruchim. That food is not awesome. That is to say, just like I mentioned, that if a Yid finishes the cooking of the food, he can make it Bishul Yisrael. The guy made it Bishul Akka, he cooked it a third. He put it into a package of parboiled rice and sent it home to me. I, by finishing the cooking, can make it Bishul Yisrael. So too, in a somewhat of a similar way, here the guy started the cooking. It passed through a point when it was Bishul Akum. Then if you would have taken a snapshot in the middle, it would have been a food that was Oyla Shulchan Aruchim and Asur. But since he kept on going, he ruined it and he took it to being back, so to speak, back to being Mutter. Now, the big difference between the cases is, of course, that in this case, in the first case, where the Yid It's the cooking at the end, a Yid helped in the cooking. The Yid made it Bishul Yisrael. It was Bishul Akum, and the Yid, that's the Chiddush of the Rashba, that the Yid can take it out of the garbage and make it back to being Bishul Yisrael. Over here, there's no Yid. Here, the food became Asur, and then something sort of on the side happened that made it not. Okay? So in rice pudding, Yesh Lodim, is it okay? Does it need Bishul Yisrael or doesn't need it? Okay? But the Rice Krispies is even more difficult. Because in the case of the Rice Krispies, the Derech Klal, it's not one process. After they finish making the big pot of rice, that is then moved over someplace else where it's turned into Rice Krispies. So there, it's much harder to justify saying that it shouldn't be Bishul Yisrael. The food was made Oil HaShulchan Lachem. It was taken out of a pot. It's all ready to go. And then the guy did something to it to make it not Oil HaShulchan Lachem. Imagine if you baked a potato in your house and it was all ready to be Oil HaShulchan Lachem, and then he did something else to it. He chopped it up into little pieces and fried it and made it into something that's not oil. Why would it be mutter? The food was really oil shulchan aruch at the beginning. It was a big pot of rice. The fact that he then moved it over and made Rice Krispies out of it, it's harder to justify in that case that it should be mutter. Now, he did have it in mind. It was the intention all along that it turned into Rice Krispies, but it's harder to justify in that case that the food shouldn't need Bishul Yisrael. So here we have a food. Here we have a food, Rice Krispies, that anybody would look at it and say, of course, this food is not oil of shulchan welcome. Come on, Rice Krispies. But Rice Krispies really used to be a big pot of beautiful rice that was oil of shulchan welcome. So now, there may be an extra tzad l'hakel on the Rice Krispies. This is something that needs more research, which is that I have been told that when they add all kinds of ingredients into the rice, that taste good when they turn into a Rice Krispie, when the rice is crisp afterwards, but that when the pot of rice would be finished, it doesn't taste right. Because at that point, the food is not, it has the things that are added, the other additives that work well in making a rice, a crisp rice, a breakfast cereal, those additives don't work, don't make it taste very good when it's in that middle stage. Okay, so if that's true, then it was never oil shulchan aruch. Okay, but it's something that needs to be considered. Okay, let's move to a different food in the same type of a shayla. I'm guessing that everybody here has seen potato flakes. Okay, potato flakes are it's these little like powder, like flakes, little pieces that are used. You add water to it, and it turns into mashed potatoes. Okay, and they're famous for being used to make school lunches. Okay, they make it to serve to people who you don't think of as shulchan aruch. Okay, they make it for what are you gonna do? You plop together some of the stuff, and it's not as good. Yes, welcome. I've heard from caterers that no, it's fine, it's no problem. But let's assume that it's not oil shulchan aruch. It's also used to make another food, to make Pringles. Right? You make Pringles out of potato flakes. Again, it's not oil shulchan aruch. You don't think of Pringles as a more sophisticated food. Okay. Excuse me? For making the filling in a bereka. Yes, you could use it for that also. Okay, so then you potentially go to something that is more oil shulchan aruch. Okay. You're saying is that even if the mashed potato itself is not good enough to serve al shulchan aruch, if you dress it with other things, you could be. Okay, good. So you're making things worse. I'm even assuming that it's not al shulchan aruch. But we have a different problem. He has a good point. That there are ways to use that it is oil. But there's a different thing. How do you make potato flakes? Okay, the way you make potato flakes, you already guessed this. But the way you make potato flakes is it takes three steps to make potato flakes. The first thing is called blanching. Okay, they dunk the potatoes into hot water. And I don't know what this means. I'm going to sound very sophisticated. It releases gases, whatever that means. Somehow it's good for the potatoes. I don't know. And then they cook it. Okay. And then after they cook it, then they take the potatoes and they put them onto something called a drum dryer. Okay. A drum dryer is a huge piece of equipment. It's like a drum, like laying on its side, a drum, a boiling hot, filled with steam, this drum, and they shovel the potatoes onto it. And when the potato hits the drum, it immediately, all the water boils out, and it turns into a potato flake. Okay, it turns out it turns into this flaky stuff that looks like, I don't know, big dandruff. Okay, it dries right on this thing, and then when it comes off there, you say, man, the stuff is not oil shulchan aruch. Okay, but the problem is, just like our Rice Krispies, when before they shovel it on, and I kid you not, they do with shovel, they sit there in boots with shovels, throwing it onto the thing, before they shovel it on, the pot is this huge pot of delicious mashed potatoes. A huge, huge pot full of mashed potatoes. Okay, so at that point, the potatoes are oil shulchan aruch. Okay, the potatoes have been cooked to be oil, before someone ruined it by taking it and shoveling it onto a big drum dryer. It's a delicious big pot full of mashed potatoes.
So sorry, I missed the process. I don't know when it got mashed.
Okay. As part of the cooking ends up mashing them also. Okay, they get cooked enough that they turn into a mashed potato. But even if they wouldn't be mashed, I've seen it. They look, it's a huge, delicious pot full. You're ready to eat lunch. I mean, you can eat forever. Okay. So the silence is over here. We're back to our same question. It's sort of like the Rice Krispies. Okay. So for in this case, we're back to our earlier cooler, which is across the board, the standard in the industry is that second stage of cooking is done with live steam. That's the standard, at least in the places that I've been in, the big industry that there is in this area that does potatoes, that's the standard in the industry. They cook it with live steam. That is to say, that big pot is filled with a zillion potatoes in it. They pump live steam into it and they cook the potatoes. So, if you're able to say, cooking with live steam is considered ishun, and it's not in the isur bishalakim, then you would seem to be okay. The food is cooked with live steam. There are potential other tzirufni that I'm not mentioning, but the simple reason to be made to not require bishul yisrael for that food would be to say that it's cooked with live steam. Okay, now, but that is dependent on one piece of information, which is, I told you there were three steps. The first step was blanching. Okay, and typically, in the blanching, the potatoes, they get sliced up and dunked into the hot water, and they sit there for a couple of minutes, and it doesn't cook the food. Okay, but I once made a trip that included maybe a dozen potato factories. And in that trip, at every factory, we tasted the potatoes as they came out of the blanching. And in Kamat, every single factory, they were not edible when they came out of the blanching. Okay? But in one factory, they were. In one factory, they had a different style. They cut it very thin, and they let it sit for a long time, even though the other people screamed that it was terrible and it ruins the potatoes and you can't do that. In this factory, that's what they did. So that in this, now there's no heter of steam anymore. The person who's cooking in the water is making kamacha ben chusoy. That food is also at that point. Cooking later in steam is not going to save it. We could say cooking in steam doesn't ruin it, but it can't save it. So
you tasted and it was tasty and it was bishalakim?
Right, that's correct. Okay. Right. So you want to know why I tasted it? Okay. That's a good question. Well, as I said, there's a prima godum.
You're testing.
No, the prima godum. The prima godum says that a person, if roi is that the food's going to be mutter and it's nisa drabonim, then they're allowed to do te'ima to see if it's right. So the assumption is that it was mutter. In fact, in the past 10 factories, it was fine. That was the assumption. So it's a prima godum that you're allowed to taste it. But it's a good question. Okay. It's prima godum. Okay. So what I'm getting to over here is that even if you're gonna say that cooking with steam is mutter, and the potato flakes are gonna be mutter because they were the bishul by the gori is not considered bishul, okay? But that now you have this rule. You told me that it's mutter, but you have to apply it properly to the situation. If you're getting your potatoes from the factory that has the different style of cooking with the blanching does do a cooking, you can't just say my policy is that I'm allowed to, it's cooked with steam and it's mutter. Someone's got to be hands-on and know what's going on. In fact, the first stage didn't do the cooking. Okay, now we now move to another potato food. This, you may never have seen this food. They're called potato dices. Okay, which is, companies prepare potatoes. They cook them, they cut them into these very small shapes or cubes or different styles of shapes. And they cook them in water, they cook it that is partially edible. That was the standard in all the places. It was kamaichel ben drusoy coming out of, but it comes out of the, out of that cooking that it does. So these foods are partially cooked. They're cooked in water. They're at this point they're partially edible, so they should be bishalachim. So what possible reason, if any, is there to say that food doesn't need bishul yisrael? Now, I keep telling you that you don't and you don't. In all these cases, means to say is that if you want to be more careful, you're going to make it bishul yisrael. So is there a reason to think that it shouldn't be? So here, this food is an unusual food. That this food is sometimes people will give hashgacha to it, and the hashgacha will be, even though it's bishul achim. Bishul achim, some people, I tell us that sometimes consumers on the phone, they say, does your hashgacha, I work in Chicago for the CRC, does your hashgacha makpid that food should be bishul yisrael? So I say, you know, even though the halachas of bishulachim are in the second chelik of Yerdeh, it's still in the rules of what has to make food kosher. So the second chelik of Yerdeh is just as important as the first chelik. You know, so we have to think about those. It's not always bishul Yisrael, but we have to think about those halachas also. So how can someone sell potato dices that are bishulachim? What's going on over here? So the answer is, I'll tell you, the reason is because this food is not fully cooked. It's only partially cooked. So what is someone going to do with his potato dices? He's going to take them home, and he's going to make something with it. Or it's going to go to a restaurant. That's more where it goes to typically, to a food service establishment. And they're going to cook it. Now, if it's a kosher place, of course, the yid's going to light the fires. In every kosher food establishment, someone's making sure it's officially sold. So what will happen is, for Ashkenazim, it'll be saved by the yid who finishes the cooking. It doesn't leave the factory fully cooked. It leaves the factory half cooked. So when it leaves the factory and it's bishlachim, but we know that the consumer is going to save it. Okay? And that's fair, but it's only fair. Because it's a tremendous michshul. Because the potential michshul is that on that same trip, I went to a company that was making vodka. Okay? And you don't want to know what they used to use to make vodka. When the hashgacha came in, they said, no, you can't use that stuff. So they said, okay, they'll buy potato dices to make their vodka. So what did they do? They bought potato dices, one of these kind of shapes, from a company with hashgacha. They took those potatoes and they turned them into vodka. Okay. Was there a yid cooking the potatoes over there? Of course not. Well, why should they? What? You're making vodka. What does vodka need to be bishul Yisrael? So they started off with something that was, it came in bishul akum, with the assumption that he is going to finish it off. Well, who knows what's going to happen to it? What's going to happen like this? You know, sometimes you get they have this, what they call a cup of soup. Okay, it comes in a cup with a bunch of dried out things in it. You pour in hot water into it, and it becomes edible. Okay, well, if there's potatoes in there, those potato dices were half cooked in the factory. And then when you pour the hot water into it, it gets fully cooked. Okay, so that is to say, if you say to the guy, could you put hot water into my cup of soup and finish off the cooking? The finishing off of the cooking was done by a guy also. So you're selling it to me because you're counting on me finishing off the cooking. How do you know what the company's going to do with it? If they put it into a soup, that he has to finish it off. If they sell it to a company, that the company, but the Rav Amash of that company is not paying attention. So it's potential. I won't tell you the name of the person, but I was sitting with a prominent person and talking about one of these questions, and that person was sitting there, and while we were talking about it, was munching on these dried out potato dices, because they're like sort of like crunchy potato chips, okay, like really hard, and I'm sitting there, and it dawns on me that the person, we're sitting talking about a shayla, the person is eating bishlachim, okay, because it's not fully cooked, but it's already enough to be bishlachim. So the person's just sitting there munching on the thing. I'm like, oh, hello, spit it out. No, you can't eat that. You can't, that food, that's the shayla. Maybe you'll finish off at home, but, you know, chewing is, okay, fine. Let's get to a little, is the potato dices, I'm going to assume that they can be Olah Shukma. Let's say it like this. That's a fair question. As they are, as half-cooked potatoes, if you cook them a little bit more, they're fine. They're just potatoes. At this point, they're just plain old cooked potatoes, which are harder than Olah. I'm assuming they are. We'll go to a little bit of a simpler question. Beans. Yes?
I just want to clarify an issue with the bishlachim finishing off by a Jewish person. I'm confused with the first speak with pasachim versus bishlachim as to whether a person is allowed to finish a Jewish person finishing off. I understood that with bishlachim, that once it's past a certain stage, that a Jew finishing off doesn't help.
Right, so that's something that I need to ask the first speaker to clarify. I didn't understand it because the Mechaber says like that for bishlachim, a yid finishing off doesn't help, but the Ramah says that it does. So that's something that happens. If the Kamacha Ben Shishoy, the Ramah says that you can finish it off. So for Ashkenazim, a yid can finish it off. So I wasn't clear. So there was something I have to clear. As far as I know, it's a din in the Ramah. Beans and chickpeas. The Ramah says that they don't have bishlachim because they're not Olah Shulchan Aruch. And even though it was mentioned that beans and that we can't follow the rules that were given a few hundred years ago, you know, because Olah Shulchan Aruch changes from times and places, most people would assume that nowadays beans and chickpeas are still not Olah Shulchan Aruch. One. No. No, no, I shouldn't say that. They can eat chol, but they don't eat at shulchan aruchim. You know, when the king of Denmark shows up, they don't serve it. That's, at least so far. Okay. Yes. Yeah. We are not working with that assumption that anything he eats is correct. Okay. There is a little bit of a shaila for that, but I'm really just. The question is not, as I mentioned, the Chazon Ish says that anything the Melech eats is considered oil shulchan aruchim. We work with the assumption that it's not, that it's what the king serves when he has sophisticated company comes to show up. Now, the truth is, if there were a real king, a Yiddish king, he might in fact serve it when the governor, the mayor of Haifa comes, maybe he would serve him. Don't have to think about that. Okay, for now, we're safe. So there is a little bit of a question to this, which is, in recent years, it's become popular to serve something called three-bean salad. Okay, three-bean salad is, what do you think is made of? Beans. Okay, and it's served at Shulchan Aruchim. But it's, most people assume that Haganah, there is a way to serve it at Shulchan Aruchim, unless you're actually cooking that food. We say the fact that somebody came up with one way to use the food on Shulchan Aruchim doesn't, so to speak, ruin it for the whole food. You can't say that just because there's one, you cook the beans. There is one way. A guy can open the can up and turn it into a three-bean salad. We don't assume that one, you know, unusual way to use it should ruin it for the whole food. Okay. But now, having heard that, let's move to two other foods where that shaila is not so simple. Okay. And those two foods are chow mein noodles and watered chestnuts. Those two foods are foods that, when they're cooked, kishelehein la'atzmam, are not oil shulchan aruchim. Okay, if the people who eat chow mein noodles straight is my kids. Okay, they sit to him, they walk past the pantry and they eat some chow mein noodles. It's a snack. And who I don't know anybody who eats watered chestnuts, but I'm sure there's somebody out there, it's not shulchan aruchim. They don't, you ever came to a wedding and they put a big bowl of watered chestnuts. Okay, they don't, it doesn't happen. But what do you do with those foods? You take chow mein noodles and you put them with other foods at a very fine looking dish. The watered chestnuts are probably in the same dish. But you mix it with different kinds of things and then you serve it in a way that it is oil shulchan aruchim. Meaning, not only our way of using it, but a prime way of using these foods is our shulchan aruchim, but every time you use it, it's in a secondary use. Okay? You're never served a bowl of chow mein noodles at shulchan aruchim, but you would very much be served it as a tuffle to other foods. Okay? It would be served as a secondary part of other foods. You have a plate of rice with some vegetables and chow mein noodles mixed on top of it, and it would be considered oil shulchan aruchim. So should such a food be considered that the food is oil shulchan aruchim? Again, the food itself would never be eaten al shulchan aruchim. But the food, in one of its prime uses, it is used as shulchan aruchim. So there have been those who said that you can't judge a food by its use as a tuffle. You have to look at the food by itself. If you have potatoes, you have rice is served al shulchan aruchim. But if the food itself is it's only shulchan aruchim as a tuffel, can't use it like that. And what's sort of similar to a din, which is, in bishul akum, if you have a mixture of two foods, okay, the example in shulchan aruchim is, you made bread, and the bread, you made challah, and the challah has in it flour and water and eggs in the batter to make the egg. I'm not talking about the egg that's on the top. You made it flour, water, eggs, and 10 other things. The eggs that are in the batter don't need bishul yisrael because, including the hefter of paspalta, because the eggs are tuffel to the bread. So there is such an idea in bishul akum that things that are tuffel don't count. Things that are tuffel are not considered. So that one, that's sort of like extending that to here also, that the only time it's ala shulchan aruchim is as a tuffel, it's as what it's secondary use, we don't have to consider that. Okay? Of course, the question is, it's because it's tough. Okay, it's two times. The din by eggs, it says it's tough and not nicotism of it. If you look in Kufi Gimel, where the din is again, there it is more of a favorite of the word tuffle. And if you have a ma'achal made of two foods, and one is ikker, one is tuffle, you follow the ikker in the side of bishul akum. So by the case of eggs, it really is because the tuffle doesn't say it as clearly. Okay, that's in Kufi Beis. In Kufi Gimel, it says it more clearly that it's because the other ingredients are tuffle. The, problem is that in the halachas of bishul akum l'chayra, this the way of serving rice with chow mein noodles on it, or a dish with vegetables and water chestnut l'chayra would not be considered a tuchel. Okay, so the dinner of bishul akum are not the same as the hilchos brachos. L'chayra would not be, and even the whole story is harder to hear because you're saying just using it as a tuchel is not a way to judge whether something is on a shulchan aruch. But here, that's really the way you use this food. What do you do with water chestnuts? You cook them up and then you mix them with other vegetables and serve them a shulchan aruch. It's not a like a by-the-way kind of way to use it. It's very much the way that you use those foods. So it's harder to hear why those... So again, even though we said for beans, there's an unusual way to use it on shulchan aruch. We ignore that. But it's harder to say that over here when this is the primary reason that you use the food, it's harder to say that this food should not, that shouldn't make it oil shukma. Okay.
And one that we're talking about?
Okay, canned what chestnuts is, okay, the way it's cooked is, I didn't mention that, we really were talking about steam, but the way it is that the water chestnuts up into the can with a brine, some kind of a liquid, the can is sealed, and then usually the can is cooked in steam, okay? But that's, almost nobody holds that that's in the heter of Ishun. Because what's cooking the water chest, there's heat coming from the steam, but it's in a like a little pot filled with water, okay? It's getting hot, the whole thing is getting hot with liquid in there. Almost nobody holds that that's considered Ishun. When we say Ishun, steam should be considered Ishun, is like I described to you, Rabbi Levin was saying, you've got a whole room full of tunas, and there's just steam cooking them. Okay, they're just steam pumping into the room. That's not the same as when it's in the catering. Okay, most hold that, almost nobody holds that that's considered Ishun.
Okay.
L'chayra, that if the company's making three bean salad, the thing that itself is oil, l'chayra, that everyone should agree that that needs Bishul Yisrael, because if they're making the food, that's oil Shulchan Aruch. You can't say, no, it's not oil. This one Mamash is. L'chayra, it's hard to escape that that needs it. Okay. We're moving to, off of Olah Shulchan Aruch to the other big klal in Bishul Yisrael, which is that if a food is Ne'achol Chai, if a food is edible raw, it doesn't need Bishul Yisrael. And for this din, there's a very important shach to know for this din. The shach talks about the following case. What happens if you have a food that most people eat cooked? Most people don't eat this food raw. But there are people who eat it raw. The food is, there's people who eat this food raw. The Shach says that food is considered Ne'achol Chai. It's considered edible raw. Because people do eat it raw. Excuse me, they may prefer to eat it in the cooked form, but people do eat it raw. That food is considered Ne'achol Chai. So now, we have to give you three examples to understand that Shach, when it does or doesn't apply. Again, the Shach said, if some people eat it raw, and just everybody prefers to eat it cooked, that's considered Ne'achol Chai. Okay, the first case is, this is Rabbi Levin, who was so nice as to have me over, and for breakfast, basically served this to me. So I told him, that I'd mention this case. I was going to mention it anyhow. But cranberries. Cranberries are terribly tart. And nobody eats cranberries as they are. You can't bite into cranberries. It's not considered edible to bite into cranberries. They can't eat them. So they're so tart, you can't eat them. So what do you have to do? You have to sweeten them. Okay, the cranberry juice we were eating was cranberries mixed with a sweetener. You don't eat pure cranberry juice. Nobody eats that. So the cranberries have to be sweetened. Okay, the typical way that you sweeten cranberries is you cook the cranberries together with some kind of a sweetener that gives the sweet taste to them, and then you want to make cranberry sauce. You cook cranberries with some kind of a sweetener, and it makes it have a sweet taste to it. Okay, so the typical way that people eat cranberries is after they've been sweetened through cooking. So most people are eating it cooked. However, if you look at the package of cranberries, if you buy actual raw cranberries, it says packages that I have seen give recipes for how you at home can make it to sweeten it without cooking. You're not a factor. You're not going to cook it up. There are ways to sweeten it that you should be able to eat it without cooking it. And the people in the industry have said, the etzem doesn't need cooking. It's not like a potato that you can't bite into. It doesn't need cooking. The cooking is just a way to get the sweetener into it. Okay? And there are other ways to get sweetener into it without cooking. You can get it, and the package gives you ideas of how to sweeten it in your house. I mean, without having to cook it. So here we have a food that almost nobody eats it raw, but people would eat it raw if they had a different way to sweeten it. So does that qualify for the Shach, or it doesn't qualify for the Shach? The Shach said that if people usually eat it cooked, but they would also eat it raw, they would potentially eat it raw. So does this food that you really could eat raw, but you just choose not to because you buy it from the store already cooked and sweetened, but you could have sweetened it without cooking, does that count? So on that Shiloh, so far, we would say that this kamat nobody, this is the opposite now of the beans, this kamat nobody who eats the cranberries without cooking. Even though the Shach said that some people eating it raw is good enough, but here there's nobody. How many people buy the package of cranberries and then go put sugar onto it and whatever they have to do to make it edible? Most people don't. Most people eat it in the cooked way. Okay, but we were saved by the new invention, which was, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, cranberries were very popular, so a lot of farmers started planting cranberries. And then the fad died, and all of a sudden there were all these farms with cranberries, and they had nothing to do with them. So to solve the problem, they invented something called craisins. Okay, craisins are dried out cranberries, and that was a way to deal with there was too much cranberries to go around. How much can you eat? So they came up with craisins. Now craisins are not cooked, and they are sweetened without them. So all of a sudden it became a significant group of people who eat cranberries not cooked. So the cranberries went back to qualifying for the Shach. The Shach said if some people eat it raw and most people eat it cooked, that's fine. That's considered an Nechal Chai. So because craisins are a thing that people eat raw, it went back to being considered an Nechal Chai.
So what happens to something that used to always be cooked but now you normally use steam to cook it? So does that become that it's over?
Say it again? Can you say the question again?
That normally used to cook potatoes, but now a good portion of potatoes are made with steam. So if your steam is not shishol, so then even ones that are cooked should be considered nefachai because it's
okay. That's actually a very good question. It relates to what I'm about to say. I'm going to wait to answer your question. It relates to what I'm about to say now, which is the next food is beets. Okay, beets are not, they're not tart, but they're hard as a rock. You can't bite into a beet. Okay, it's not nechel chai. But probably half the people in this room ate beets that were raw yesterday. Because when you make chrein, okay, you mix horseradish with beets. You don't have to cook those beets for that. Because they're with other foods, because they're with the beets, with the horseradish, they don't need to be cooked. So here we have a food that typically, if you buy a can of beets, okay, you're buying cooked beets. That's the way you usually eat it. If you want to buy beets in the fruit store and take them home and cook them, you cook them before you eat them. But there are people, plenty of people who eat beets, who are eating beets raw. So should that be the same as the cranberries? Okay. So this case is more complicated because, as was mentioned, in this case, the beets, they're not really raw. They're raw in the scientific sense. But in the din, we don't consider them raw. They were kavush. They're sitting in vinegar and with other things in there that make them in din be considered cooked. So maybe we should say is these are food, they're never eaten raw. Either they're cooked up in a pot or they're cooked up in a way what we call kavush. Now, for bishalakum, kavush doesn't make it be considered cooked. For bishalakum, steaming maybe wouldn't be considered cooked, in your question. But no one eats it raw. It doesn't mean that it's raw. It just means it was cooked in a way that didn't make it awesome. But that doesn't mean that if anyone's eating it raw, no one's eating the beet, no one eats potatoes raw. They eat it cooked in a way that avoids the iser. Okay, fine, they avoided the iser, but they didn't eat it raw. So here, it's hard, it's questionable whether that should make it, in this case, question whether it should make it us or not. They're eaten raw, but they go through a process that the din would be considered a type of a cooking. So in effect, no one eats it raw. Okay, but these are easy. You could live with these. You could live without eating. Well, okay, maybe the next one you can live with also. But the next one is more complicated. There's another food that kamat, everybody eats it cooked. Kamat, everybody eats it cooked. But were I to give it to you in a blind taste test, and close your eyes, and here I'll spoon you some of it, you don't think it's fine. You don't think it's edible. Kamat, nobody eats it raw. And that food is sweet corn. Okay, corn on the cob. what we call sweet corn, the canned corn, like you eat like that. That food, when you take it off, you know, take it out of the husks, you eat it, the food is edible. It tastes fine. And the Haraya, my kids eat it. Now that they've been told that it's Nechachai, because then today they say, Ma, don't bother cooking it. Let's eat it. They just peel it up and eat it. It is edible. If you were served it, you would eat it. But the typical, not typical, 98% of the people who eat corn eat it cooked. Most people prefer the taste in the cooked form. It doesn't taste the same. It tastes fine when it's raw, and it tastes different when it's cooked. And most people prefer the cooked taste. So in this food, does that qualify for the shach? And it's good and it's bad. The beets and the cranberries are foods that were inherently not edible as they were. The cranberries are too tart, and the beets are too hard. You can't eat them. So we hear that they're more considered not edible raw. Excuse me, the corn, there's nothing wrong with eating it as it is. It seems to be the classic of what the Shach was talking about. It is Nechachai. It is edible in its raw form, but most people prefer it in the cooked form. So it would seem that it should be mutter. In other words, that the canned corn doesn't need to have been bishlishol. On the other hand, we go back to what I mentioned by the beans. There's kamat nobody who eats it raw. Okay, my kids notwithstanding. There's kamat nobody who eats it raw. So how can you say, when the Shach said, there are some people eat it raw, we're extending that. We're saying, some people eat it raw, meaning some people would eat it raw. That's not what the Shach said. The Shach said some people do eat it raw. In this food, there's kamat nobody who actually eats it raw. It is edible raw, but it doesn't eat raw. So that's a clear, if you're going to buy a can of canned corn, if it was cooked without fish or you saw, you're eating it because you're saying this food is nechachai. Even though in your life you've never eaten that food raw, and nobody who you know has eaten that food raw. So if you're making a hashara that this is nechachai, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying it's a hashara that this is nechachai, even though no one eats it raw, but everyone could eat it raw. You could potentially eat it raw.
How is it cooked?
It's cooked, when you talk like a can of corn, as was mentioned before, it's in the can with a brine, and then usually cooked with steam.
Don't you
cook it at home? What?
When you take it out of the can, you cook it again.
When you cook the canned corn,
okay. Water.
Okay. That food is fully cooked. Okay. If it went through, okay, that's a different topic. It's fully cooked when it comes out of the can. If you like it warm, that you're choosing to make it warm, but it's not. It's fully cooked at that point. Okay. Now we'll get back. I hope, if we have time, we're going to get that. Hold on a second. There's a different kind of corn. Okay. That's used for making other foods. Why is it used sweet corn? There's a different kind of corn that's used for making like tortillas and wraps. That's a whole different kind of corn, which is surely not nechachai. If we have time, we're going to get to that. That's its own shiloh step. You have a question?
Tuna fish and salmon.
Yes. Okay, so I forgot to mention at the beginning, it's in here in my notes if you want to see, that one of the shilohs I'm not going to talk about is fish shilohs. Okay, all fish shilohs, that's its own. Next year's Yachikala, I'll announce it now. Next year's Yachikala is on top of the fish. I don't have a responsibility for that, but it's its own topic, it's its own shiloh. Fish has many shilohs too, I'm not going to talk about that. But sushi is its own quirk in the shiloh.
Green beans, same as people to eat.
Green beans are raw, are nechachai.
Yeah.
They are nechachai. Okay. In the interest of time, we're going to keep on moving. Okay, we have two more topics, and I'm going to try to do what I can. Okay, is corn a shulchan aruch? My understanding is that it is. That the sweet corn is considered a shulchan aruch. You could disagree, or maybe that depends on the place. I believe that it's certain. That's my impression. Okay. The
frozen corn,
how's it frozen corn is not, I don't know if he's asking the question, but frozen corn is not cooked. It's blanched, it's not cooked. So that's wrong. That's really wrong. Okay.
Did you come up with a fact on this on these cases?
After, you want to know what would we do in the series if you're doing it? That's sort of like a personal question. That's something, but I'm a little bit of joking, but it's something that if you're, Rabbi Levin mentioned, he mentioned that a certain amount you have to trust the Hashgacha, but a certain amount you have to question them and understand at least that they're considering the Shiloh. Okay, that meaning that the Hashgacha is run not only that it's administered properly, but it's always taken through this kind of a Shiloh. Okay, I have to tell you, when I once spoke to people in Kashrus, and I don't consider this a bad thing, I spoke to people in Kashrus about different kind of Bishlachim questions, and one of the people raised his hand, and I kid you not, he had been working Kashrus for many years, And he said, how come in my factory, I'm the mashgiach in the factory, and we make apple juice. Why doesn't my factory need b'shul Yisrael? Okay, now, of course, it's really a foolish question because apples are nechachai. So apple juice doesn't need b'shul Yisrael, and there's other reasons why he doesn't need it. But the point is, at least he had opened his mind. He said, whoa, wait a second, let me think about the plants that I go to. Am I thinking about b'shul Yisrael? So you want that your Bava Machshir and his mashgichim should be thinking about that. So I'm not going to answer your question as to whether the can, if we would give hashgacha, if we would require it or not. But it's a serious question. And if you have canned corn in your house, it's a fair question. Is my corn b'shul Yisrael? Or does it need to be? That's for your rav to answer. Okay. The Gemara, we're going to move through. We're tight on time, so I'm going to move on like this. Now you came up with your food and you decided that you want to make the food b'shul Yisrael. Okay? You heard all these scary things and you decide, okay, the food has to be b'shul Yisrael. So what does it take to make the food b'shul Yisrael? As was mentioned, the Gemara says three ways to make the food b'shul Yisrael. Either the Yid lights the fire. I'm sorry. First one is the Goy lights the fire and the Yid puts the food on. The second is that the Yid lights the fire and the Goy puts the food on. And the third is that the Goy lights the fire, the Goy puts the food on, and the Yid stokes the coals. We have three ways to make b'shul Yisrael. As was mentioned, the din that you could do esh me'esh, that if a Yid lights a fire, then the Goy could take from that fire and light the fire for which you cook from. That's an extension of the second din. That is to say, not only is it good if the Yid lights the fire, but even if the Yid lights a little fire, for which the Goy took that and lit up his whole thing, lit up the oven, that's also considered that the Yid lit the fire. And the last din, which is that if the Yid stokes the coals, that's considered b'shul Yisrael. So that, from the Rambam understands, that case, the Yid does not really contribute anything to the cooking, but he's made, that the Gemara means to say that the Yid has made a heker, that the Yid has to be involved in the cooking, from which we learn out that if any time the Yid makes a heker, that's good enough. And therefore, if the Yid it does hashlachas kisei, the Yid throws a little twig, a little toothpick into the fire, that doesn't do anything for the cooking, but that does make a heker that the Yid has to be involved, and that's considered that the Yid participated in the cooking also. And that the Rama is Mekel, that's also considered that the Yid participated. What the Gemara means to say when it says you didn't light it, you didn't put it on, you just threw something in, you had nothing to do with the cooking, but even so, it's considered b'shul Yisrael, because the Yid, he made a heker that this needs a Yid's participation.
If the Goy puts a pilot light on, and you just took a piece of paper in it.
Okay.
Paper lights now. Would that be good enough?
The Goy lit a pilot, and you added some, you put a
piece. Yeah, you put a piece of paper in.
So you're not adding anything to the fire. That's an interesting question. But you're usually not doing that. The kisei is being thrown into the fire. It's like joint part of the fire.
You put a piece of paper into the pilot, and you let it catch fire now.
It's a good question. But that might, if you threw it in, maybe it would be good. I'm not sure if that wouldn't be good. You're trying to make a heker. You're not trying to cook. You're trying to make a heker, you're saying you did it into the pilot. L'chari, that should be good also. I think that would be good.
For all future fires.
For fires taken from that pilot. It's now a Yid has made a heker to that fire. Okay. Now, I'm going to digress for a second. It has been mentioned already, even though I'm supposed to do a Bishul Akum, that one of the reasons why it's important that somebody making cooking food in food service, that means a restaurant, a hotel, a caterer, should have a mashgiach there all the time, is to take care of b'shul Yisrael. Even if there aren't other reasons to have him, one of the main reasons why it's important to have a firm person at all times in the kitchen is to take care of b'shul Yisrael. We will see in a second that there might be ways to make b'shul Yisrael without the idea, but there are many weaknesses to those systems, and it's very worthwhile to have a firm person at all times, aside from the other reasons, just for the b'shul Yisrael. And in that context, I want to mention that when you go to the store, it sort of was mentioned in passing, you go to the store and you see two products in front of you. And one is from some national brand, not a Jewish brand, and one is from a Jewish brand, with a hashgacha from somebody, sort of like a private hashgacha, not one of these national hashgachas like the COR. The assumption is that those foods from the, what we'll call the Hamish or the Jewish brand, are bishul or pas Yisrael. And that assumption is not always true. So that is to say, if you want to say, I'm going to buy this brand of corn instead of that brand of corn, this brand of pretzels instead of that big, It's worth making a phone call to the Rav Amashrit to find out if it's Bishul Yisrael. You say, why wouldn't it be Bishul Yisrael? Well, maybe it is and maybe it isn't. It's not automatic. It's easier for them, a smaller Hashgacha, who's doing a special run to make some little brand of cookies or corn, that they have the potential to make things Bishul Yisrael. You say, why not? Why not make it Bishul Yisrael? Well, why not is because, first of all, they may not have thought of it. And to your surprise, they might not have even sent the Mashgiach there. It doesn't always work as the way you think that it's going on. I'm saying is you have to think about who you're getting it from. Call them and say, hello, Harav Agoyim, did you make it Bishul Yisrael? You didn't make it Bishul Yisrael, which is, that's a fair question for you to ask the person. This is a balance over here. The bigger Hashgachas have a run different systems than the private Hashgachas, and each one has miles and chesroids. Should they write that on the package? That's their call. You know, done properly, the optimal way for a private hashgacha, in my mind, to do the hashgacha is for them to go to a company that has a national hashgacha. I mean, they're covering certain things and saying, between all the companies that make potato chips, I'm going to find the one that has the least shilas to it, that's the simplest, that's the most straightforward. I'll go to five different places until I find a good one. Now I found one that has the least shilas to it, and I'll send my mashgiach down to there, and we'll do a special run in this place. So then you're getting miles from this side and from this side. If the person goes into it blindly, or he's not doing less, then he's worse off. So you have a balance to get it there.
Usually it comes with convenience for them.
What do you say?
It's a special run. The private hashgachas, that's a lot of research.
Okay, but I don't know you personally, but when you're going to the store to buy the Jewish brand of the product, you're paying extra for it more than the other thing. And part of why you're paying for it is for that hashgacha, or presumably for that hashgacha, and for the fact that it's a small run of the Kehena. So that's their, sort of what they're supposed to be giving you for your money is that added thing.
They do it with the Tam Tam, they come in special run.
Okay, let me move along. The in food service, the best way is to have mashgiach all the time. If not to have mashgiach all the time, at least a firm presence in the establishment. If the person is not from, you may know that there's a machlokes whether someone who's not from can, if his lightings create Bishul Yisrael. And there's a machlokes. If it means something, Rav Moshe was Mekel, that it is considered Bishul Yisrael. But this question is really academic, because we're not talking here, if it happened in your house, it would be one thing. But if you go into a restaurant, you have to trust the person that they did it. There's 10 people in the back of the kitchen, okay? And one of them is the non-from person, and you're saying that his cooking is considered Bishul Yisrael. Well, then you're saying is that you're trusting him that he did the cooking. I walked into a little operation, and as we walked in, I walked in with a mashgiach. And I said to the mashgiach, is there going to be Bishul Yisrael in this factory? It was like a little factory, a little place. I said, is there going to be Bishul Yisrael? He said, yes, because Avi, who's not religious, Avi does all the cooking. Okay, but when we walked in, we said to Avi, Avi, like, you do the cooking? He said, well, things have gotten busy, and Jose helps me out also. Okay, so, the reason why Avi could say that is because since Avi doesn't keep kashrus, he's not careful about kashrus, to him it's not important, so we can't trust Avi that he's going to always do the cooking. And when he gets too busy, so then, whatever the rabbi said, whatever. So Jose will do it also. What's the difference? It's almost the same thing. So even if a not-from person's cooking creates Bishul Yisrael, with that person, you have to trust the person. So in a food service establishment, you can't trust him because he doesn't have the nemunas to make sure that he is going to do the bishul that you want him to do. Okay. It was mentioned that a pilot light is considered eish me'eish. Ramos says that that's considered the yidlit, the fire. There's the Ramah, the impression from the Ramah is that it's mutal l'chadchila. The question for that is that the Ramah is coming from Issa v'heter. The Issa v'heter says that it's only mutal b'di'evit. There's a question whether it should be mutal l'chadchila or only b'di'evit. That's a question. However, in food service is not like in your house. In your house, if you still have a pilot light, you lit it once and it stays on mamish for 6 months. And if it ever goes out, it's like a whole to-do that it went out. But in a restaurant, if it lasted for 6 days, That's a chiddush. Okay? Pilot lights in food service establishments don't last because they don't cook like you do in your house. Okay? There's mess and things all over the place. Things have caked on garbage on them. The pilot lights don't last. So if in din, the pilot light might be good enough, in practice, it's very weak to rely on it. And people put their mitzvah things. They say, okay, we make a rule in the kitchen, no one's allowed to have any matches. No, there's a no match rule in the kitchen. Okay? Other guys have another rule. They put a, if you ever go to a shiva house, they have these big candles, right, that burn for a whole 7 days. So a yid lights that and sticks it in the corner. Says, if the pilot ever burns out, light it from here. Okay? So we gave the guy a way at least to light it from the Eish Lo Yisrael. Okay? But, you know, you hear that this is not wonderful. But people do it, and for sure as a backup, in food service, they'll have a yid lighting the pilots, so that in case something went wrong, there's a backup that it was Eish Lo Yisrael. And I mention this because many hashgachas allow in their food service establishments that there should not be a mashgiach tamidi, not be a firm presence in the store at all the times. And as consumers, you have the choice, if you want to be more careful, that before you walk in, you say, is there a firm person here cooking all the time? I will choose to eat only in the place. I'm more conscientious. I'll only eat in the place with a firm person all the time. And you've done yourself made a big step towards eating food that's better, because from a Bishul Yisrael, you easily see that other has other advantages to it also. So even if you go to a city and the food, there's not a mashgiach tamidi all the time, if there are 5 restaurants, you may have to limit yourself to the one that has Bishul Yisrael, but you're, as a conscientious consumer, you are doing yourself a favor, and in the long run, you're doing everybody a favor, because by favoring the place and saying, I'm coming to you because you have the mashgiach tamidi, means the guy down the block will think twice that next time maybe he should have mashgiach tamidi also. Okay, I'm going to, for a second, talk to you about factories. In factories, there's no mashgiach tamidi. It almost never happens that there's a firm presence all the time. The Bishul Yisrael is usually created when they need to be done in very different ways through the boiler. There are many, many shayos. It's not for a oil like this, who's never going to be there. But you should know that it's quite complicated to make food Bishul Yisrael. This shayla is in din, whether it works, and the shayla is in practice of how to actually carry it out, that the factory should be Bishul Yisrael. It's quite complicated. Okay, tonight, we're out of time. I was going to talk another topic, Mr. Shem. I'll do one more thing. I'm not talking pasta shawl. My last topic was supposed to be pasta shawl. I didn't get there. In a factory, let me just say this. In a factory, it was mentioned, I'll expand for a second on it. It was mentioned that Hashlachas Kisein is enough to make food Bishul Yisrael. And there's different ideas were made for how to make Hashlachas Kisein Lamaisa in these days. And we'll break them into 2 different types. There was a glow plug, as was someone mentioned, and a light bulb. Okay, let's talk about those 2 in those ways. And I'm going to talk about this for a second. There's 2 possible reasons why. Let me start the other way. Hashlachas Kisein is, if the yid does anything to show that a yid has to be present at the cooking, that makes it Bishul Yisrael. So the svar is, if I put a little heat, I put a little, incandescent bulb. An incandescent bulb gives off a little heat. A glow plug gives off even more heat. It's very hot. I'm giving a little heat into the fire. So the yid has made a heker that you can only cook here if I do my participation. So on the surface, it seems to be that it should work. There are 2 possible problems with that, with these ideas. One is, maybe what you did is not, somehow it's not enough of a heker. For example, if I put a light bulb, I put a glow plug, but the cooking is being done by a big bank of flames, so is my thing really part of the cooking? Have I thrown my kisein into the fire? Or is my thing just cooking? And like Rabbi Kuhl mentioned, someone turned the heat on in the house. You know, what happened to the cooking? You just put a little thing on the side. It's one potential issue is that it's not part of the cooking. It's not even enough for a kisein. The second shaila is that it's a shaila weather. Think about what happens over here. I turn on the glow plug. And then the guy comes an hour later or a year later and turns on his fires. So can I make Hashlachas Kisein? Can I make a heker in a fire when the fire doesn't exist? Okay, the fire, I made my heker before the fire. The din of Hashachas Kisim is a guy made a fire, and we say, no cooking here, till I come and throw something into there. So I made he had a fire, and I made a heker. You can't cook without a yid participating. But over here, I put a kisim down, and I said, okay, build your fire on top of my kisim. So maybe, that's a machlokes, whether that thing is considered that can I make the heker before the fire or not? So there's three camps in this thing. The Hashkochas take three different stands. Some say they're all okay. You don't have to be part of it. It doesn't have to be a heker. You can make it before and that's fine. And some go the opposite extreme and say, since the heker is there before the fire, that doesn't work. And then there's the middle, which says, if the heker is significant, and I believe that the COR does this, if the heker is significant, meaning the glow plug gives a good amount of heat, it's part of it built together with the rest of the cooking, it does participate potentially in the cooking, that's considered a good enough heker, and ignores the second shaila of maybe that the heker is there from before the fire comes on. Okay, that's a middle ground, while rejecting something like a light bulb, because that's mamish doing nothing, it's not even enough, it's not enough to be a heker. Okay, let me just wrap up. I'll repeat what I said at the beginning. In learning the halachas of Bishul Akum, many of you who went through the sugyas, or just in general, you heard even from Rabbi Kula, who gave an overview of many of the halachas, I was trying to help you get a better feel for the lamaisa of that food, and try to, those dinim, so that when you think back to what goes into making the food, Rabbi Levin answered, 50 questions for people about what goes into making the foods. Many of the things that go into making the food are practical, are administrative. The Mashiach walks in, checks your ingredients, and checks these kind of labels, and there's lots that are administrative things that go in. But done properly, Hashkocha involves more things than just the administrative part of it. Much of the halacha and the thinking about a food goes into preparing food properly. Thank you for listening.